This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell. We are joined by Jason Hyland, who has just finished this book called Stop Thinking Like That No Matter What. And it's on addiction. It basically talks about his addiction, 34 years old now. And Jason, there's just where I don't know where to start with this. Let's talk about where you are at right now and what you have just done with this book, and then we can kind of back up the timeline for a little bit here.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me. Now, where I am now is light years from where I was 9 months ago. I'm coming up on 9 months clean and sober in my recovery and blessed beyond belief in regards to just where I am today. And where that is a place of peace and serenity, and seeing the help that I can put out there just by sharing this message, just by speaking with you, just by writing a post on social media, whatever it may be, because there's so many people out there right now that need to find that little sliver of hope, that little sliver of inspiration to let them know that they can get through where they are, to let them know that they're not alone, because I certainly thought I was. I didn't have any hope whatsoever just last summer. And what I started to do once I finally got the courage just to surrender and ask for help is my therapy was writing, and that led to this book, Stop Thinking Like That, which is, it's very surreal, but it's also, I knew this was going to happen when I started this journey back in writing back in September.
Let me ask you then, I'm going to go right up to the immediate point today. We're going to back up here in a minute here, but Jason, now, you have your website, which we have links to on our post here, but you continually get messages from moms, from parents of maybe a son or daughter with addiction. Basically, what are they saying, and basically, how does that match up with what you've written?
Yes, and these messages are really what pushes me to continue on and continue sharing my truth. And one thing a lot of people in society as a whole is the misunderstanding of addiction itself. And with that, you have all the stigmas, and people, you know, generalize who the addict really is. But they don't realize it could be the everyday person sitting right next to them at work, the everyday person sitting next to them in the classroom who's playing sports, who's, you know, the popular kid in theater, whatever the case may be. And so today, literally just this morning, I received a message from a lady I do not know. She reached out to me telling me about her child's problems with addiction, and she wanted to give up it and get her out of the house. And instead, she went online, saw my recent post, and said that was the strength she needed and the encouragement to remember that you don't give up on the addict, that there is hope, that there is a way, there is a solution. And this happens constantly. And for one reason or another, they're coming to me just from, again, I'm sharing my truth. And that's the reality of it. And it gives, whether it's parents or people struggling themselves, it gives them that hope. And for me, 9 months ago, that's what I just had, little sliver of hope. And if I had that, I knew that there was a way out. And fortunately, I've been able to share that with others and help others during this time of struggles, again, whether it's parents, family members, loved ones, or someone struggling themselves.
You know, I'm thinking, Jason, back years ago, so I'm much older than you, but back years ago, I mean, there's always been addiction, but, it, you know, who knows what people were addicted to. It could have been alcohol, could have been, which is probably in this world of comparisons, if you will. Now we have these opioids, which are incredible and addictive and harmful and so on. But, you know, I'm thinking that we've always had this. Now it's just taken more of a life-threatening kind of piece to it, and so much more debilitating. Maybe tell us a little bit about your addiction piece here, to give us some background on that piece.
Yes, absolutely. Well, for me, it started out what seems like it does for every quote-unquote normal kid, and that's drinking in high school, nothing crazy, just something you do on the weekends, how you meet people from other towns, you know, just get together with friends you may not see during the week and so forth. And same with college. I just thought it was just part of the process, part of, you know, I have this now rite of passage to be able to go drink. I'm on my own down in Florida. But then drugs started to come in slowly but surely. And really, though, where it all went down is after college, after baseball was over for me and taken from me. And why was it taken? Because of my drinking. The drinking's always been the number one issue. But in the mid-2000s is where I found opiates, and that's ultimately what brought me to my knees. And it took away any ethical values I may have had, took away all my morals, it took away any sense of pride, and it took away my being of who I really was. And the things you do to assure that you get that high are things I just get sick even thinking about. But to me, you know, it all happened for a reason. Obviously, it's pretty cliche to say, but that's why we're here now, and that's why the message is being spread that there is a way out. But in the end, again, once the drugs got into the equation, the opiates, it just happened a lot faster. And as you mentioned, one day you're there, one day you're gone. It can be that quick with opiates, and, you know, further with, obviously, what we're seeing today in fentanyl, the heroin, and so forth. I'm just blessed that I have survived up to this point and, you know, moving forward, just trying to help as much as I can.
Jason, you mentioned that you just kind of graduated out of the program up in Newburyport, and that is something that started about nine months ago. Is that about what you're saying? So, in other words, this so-called recovery process, or I guess call it recovery, right? I mean, that sounds okay. Recovery process really is in recent history with you. So this is all very recent stuff, but maybe tell me about that program and the kinds of things that they kind of enforced on you, that's, I'm sure, at first, but then how it empowered you.
Yeah, so what happened with me is nothing out of the ordinary when it comes to recovery, of what I found, at least, except for it was my first time ever going into a detox. July 24th, my mother dropped me off at the Danvers Detox, and I walked into there with open arms, and I told myself that I will do absolutely anything that is asked of me, no matter how painful it may be, no matter how, you know, hurt it's going to cause others and family and so forth, by speaking my truth, because I knew I could never go back to the life that I was just living, that there was no possibility of me getting out ever again. This was my one chance, and I needed to make the most of it and, you know, capitalize on the opportunity. You know, from the professionals that I was with in there, I spent 30 days at Danvers, and really what happened there was I just learned to be a human again, whether it was brushing my teeth, taking a shower, being able to look in the mirror, you know, and looking presentable. And that did something extraordinary for me. It gave me back the confidence, as I was always a very confident human being, and drugs and alcohol completely took that away from me. So once I started regaining my confidence, I started reading a lot, reading books that I got into 10 years prior when I was working for a mortgage company. And those books, Napoleon Hill, Tony Robbins type personal development books, built that confidence even more for me. And it became it took up time for me, because I was stuck in a hallway basically with 20 to 25 other individuals who were just like me, trying to get better. And finally, I got the opportunity to go up to the Link House in Newburyport, and that's a six-month program. And I told myself before I went up there, okay, 7 months for the rest of my life, 7 months for the rest of my life. And I truly knew that if I could get through those 7 months, that I had, you know, life was limitless moving forward from there on out, that I had any opportunities I wanted, and it was just up to me to get through those 7 months. Now, living with up to 18 other individuals in a house of all men between ages 22 to 65, people coming from all different walks of life, and it wasn't easy. There is no doubt about that. You're going to have your squabbles. You're going to have people who don't get along, but again, we all have the same common purpose, and that purpose is to get better so that we can one day be back out in civilization, be back out in society, and be a productive member of such society. And I knew that no matter what, I had to get better, because if I didn't, then it didn't matter moving forward with friends, family, loved ones, because I wouldn't have them, because they wouldn't talk to me, they wouldn't want to be around me, because I'm not the best version of myself, and they deserve the best version of myself, and I deserved it. So I had that attitude again, whatever it takes, and 6 months later, you know, I got through the house. There was some issues, like I mentioned, that, you know, going to come up. It's inevitable. But that's what makes you ready and prepared for life on the outside, because not everyone you're going to work with, you're going to like. But you're not going to be able to just, you know, take it matters into your own hands, so to speak. And you're going to learn how to deal with that, and you're going to have different issues pop up because life happens. And living in that house really, really taught me that. There are four key rules that had to be followed there. No car, no job, no girls, no cell phone. And what that did was it brought all your focus and all the attention on what mattered, and that was getting better. And being able to just put in focus your attention on that makes it a lot easier. And it's not easy, because you're going to see some things, some faults that, you know, you wish you didn't have. But it's the past. It's not who I am. I know those things are behind me, and that all I can do is learn from them. And, you know, I appreciate them because it made me where I am today. And that, again, that is writing the book and helping others, whether it's family, friends, loved ones, or addicts themselves.
Jason, of course, you're coming from a very successful baseball career at St. John's Prep, success in college as well. What was it, MVP in the College World Series?
Yes, in 2003 with the University of Tampa.
Yeah. And yet, you know, the one thing I want to follow up on, you when you first responded to my last question, was your mom took you to detox. So tell me about your mom, because this whole process is tough on parents. At any time, at certain ages, it's always difficult with parents and children. I get that piece. And on top of this, you have this addiction issue that you're dealing with. Tell me about your relationship, say, with your mom and how that's evolved.
Well, needless to say, she has been the one most affected by my addictions, other than myself. And I'm an only child. So for her to, you know, have to have the reality that I might not be there one day, I might be gone because of my alcoholism, because of my addictions, it was hard. And I never knew she felt that way or she was hearing those things until a few months into my recovery. We were driving one day and she told me that. And I kind of just blew it off nonchalant because I didn't know how to respond. And what I realized was that that's how bad it was. That's where I was. That was the part of where I brought this all to, and brought myself to, and brought to my family to. So her bringing me to that detox was really the first time we even spent much time together in months, because she didn't want anything to do with me, and rightfully so. I wouldn't want anything to do with me either at that point. Now, today, you know, we're still going to have your typical mother-son squabbles, and, you know, we're both very stubborn Irish people, but I can laugh about it like I am, because it's so beautiful to be able to have that relationship with my mother, because it was her and I for so long, just her and I, and being able to get that back into my life was really one of the first true blessings, if not the biggest blessing. You know, I knew once I found myself that I could be of use and, you know, make others around me happy like I did before. So my relationship with her has been, you know, truly a blessing. It's building each day. And as I mentioned, you're going to have your normal, everyday, you know, bickering between a mother and a son, especially being an only child. But that's just part of, you know, being able to handle it now versus how would I handle it before. And it's run a way to try to satisfy those urges, because it's the only way I knew how to.
Jason, imagine, I think you kind of alluded to this, I'm kind of phrasing it a little bit differently, but when you were, you know, addicted and doing whatever, you're kind of burning bridges, you're cutting people out of your life, so to speak. They're getting rid of you, so to speak, and it's probably mutual, those kinds of things are happening. But since you've come out of the program in Newburyport, since you're putting things back together, tell me about, do you have a strategy, or what sort of things are becoming, putting your life back together? How does that look, kind of, because that's basically what you're doing, right? Putting it all back together, and how do you feel in that regard?
First and foremost is I have to be selfish, and what I mean by that is I got to focus on making sure today that I am, you know, the best person I can be, and that's clean and sober Jason. If I'm not, then I'm of no use to society, to friends, to family, to my girlfriend, to my dogs. I'm no use to them if I'm not, you know, being true and honest to myself. And that first just comes with my recovery, putting it number one. The other things will fall into place. I've truly, and wholeheartedly had this feeling in me since maybe September or October when I started writing, that this process, my journey, is so much bigger than myself. I realized that something was telling me to keep going and keep, you know, ignoring the outside noise, because there's a lot of people who want to see you fail. There's a lot of people who, you know, think you're doing it for yourself and you're selfish. Well, guess what? I am doing it for myself, because if I'm not, if I'm worrying about what you think or what you're doing or trying to live the life you want me to live, then I'm getting absolutely nothing out of it in regards to, you know, bettering myself to help you, to help others. And once I learned that and, you know, really ignore the outside noise, it opened up so many more doors for me and opportunities, because in the end, I feel recovery is the most selfless thing one can do for themselves. Yes, I took 7 months away from anyone and everyone that ever mattered to me, but I did so because I wanted to be the best person for them coming out of this. And it's one day at a time, it's working. You know, today I couldn't be happier. I truly mean that. I am in a very, very peaceful state of mind. I see a bright future, and I know that what I'm doing today is going to help better myself and others moving forward. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
We're talking with Jason Hyland from Beverly. Jason, I want to follow up on the writing piece, because you had mentioned that very early when we started talking here today. And, you know, I imagine there's things such as, you know, writing therapy kind of a piece. And I was talking to somebody a week or so ago, and he was talking about how he's driven to give back to his community. Not about the addiction piece, but just driven to give back to his community. That's a motivating factor for all the things that he does. In your case, though, I can understand why. You know, want to have a bigger purpose for what you're doing in writing. So maybe tell me a little bit about some of the things you were writing, and when this process was very, very, maybe in its infant stages, you're writing, you're thinking about writing a book. Maybe you weren't thinking about writing a book at that particular time, but you're writing, and some of the things you're writing down, and what you're thinking as you're doing some of that writing.
Well, the book aspect, no, I wasn't thinking of writing a book initially. That's for sure. I was just worrying about staying sober another day. And I mentioned the confidence factor. Once that started to kick in and I started reading some very positive material, I started thinking, wait, why can't I still have the life that I want, that I always dreamed of? What's holding me back? Just because I'm in recovery, just because I am an addict, was an addict, however people want to look at that, I can still have anything I ever wanted. And I just began to write for myself. It killed time, to be honest, when I was, like I said, stuck inside that hallway and all the windows around me, very little life outside. You go outside for 15 minutes a couple times a day, that was it. So I just engulfed myself in positive material and personal development material and started writing it on my own. And what really changed with my writing being, it was always therapeutic for me. But when I went to the Link House, I just noticed that there were so many individuals that I was living with that were just completely beaten down, distraught, living and dwelling in the past. And it bothered me. It really did. I would speak to my counselor there often about it and be like, why can't they just get over it? But I had to realize we all do come from different parts of it. But I just wanted everyone to feel the way I was feeling. And what I was feeling was, okay, I can do this. I can still have the life I wanted. I can still, you know, be happy, have a family, have the, you know, a house, all that stuff, and be successful. It didn't matter that just because I was in recovery, that it wasn't going to hold me back. And I felt that there's too many people that do that. They feel that there's no hope. Okay, yes, I'm clean and sober, but there's still, I'm never going to be able to have a life I wanted. So that pushed me and motivated me to write about it, because I was seeing it happen firsthand. And it's not like I'm anything special here and I'm doing anything out of the ordinary, other than, you know, believing in myself and what I'm doing. And I'm seeing the results. You always read about it, like the power of a positive mind, the law of attraction. I'm living it, and there's no doubt about that, and I wanted to share it with as many people as possible. When I start talking about it with people who I haven't seen in a while, or people from the program that I haven't happened to, like I get so passionate and emotional, and I just want to, like, give them what I have and give them the feeling that I have, because life is so beautiful if you really want it. There, like I said, with the past, it is what it is. There's nothing I can do that's going to change what I've done. Absolutely nothing. It's going to be there forever. Either I can live in the pain and anguish of all the hurt I've caused, or I can do something about it and make a better life for myself and those around me. And that's what Stop Thinking Like That really does. It's not a memoir or autobiography by any means. It does have some stories about my personal journey, but there's others in there that I've interviewed, whether in recovery themselves, other authors, real successful entrepreneurs, and just really trying to get all the traits and characteristics that they all have in common and how they beat adversity, how they, you know, overcame their struggles, and how they, you know, lived the life that they always dreamed of, because that is what is possible if you really want it. And it doesn't matter where you are right now. It doesn't matter how far down you may be. If you want it, you can have it. And I say it every day, multiple times a day, conceive, believe, achieve. Conceive, believe, achieve.
You know, Jason, some of the things you're talking about, I'm a big believer in that. There are certain strategies out there that work. Not all strategies work for all people, and whatever you're trying to do, whether in your case, recovery, or whatever you're trying to do in business or whatever, there's all kinds of strategies, and you just got to pluck from them what can work for you, what would work best. But I want to go back. I know you mentioned being looking forward, which is great, I think, but you must have drawn on some of what your athletic background, because of the success that you had there. Describe that a little bit to me, because you had the success at the prep, and maybe you can share that with us, and college baseball as well. Maybe share a couple of those successes, but also that's a huge part of your life. You can't leave that behind. And did you use that athletics as a kind of a building block as one of your strategies?
Athletics and baseball in particular is number one in my life. It has been since I can remember, and it is still today. There's no doubt about it. Baseball has always been my true love, my passion. It's made me who I am, for better or for worse. But the better is really what has helped me in the recovery process. Yes, I do have a pretty decorated athletic career. You know, from being inducted into the Prep Hall of Fame, which is one of my proudest achievements, College World Series MVP, and really just living out the dream that I always wanted, until, unfortunately, obviously, the addictions took over and consumed me. But what those days playing and being on the diamond really did, it built that confidence up, the confidence that I lost because of my addictions. And as I mentioned, once I started seeing the confidence come back in me, I realized I can do absolutely anything I want. There is nothing in the world that can stop me. My mother always said it. You can do anything you put your mind to. She texted it to me 2 days ago. And it's true. There's no doubt about it. I knew I was always very talented. I was a very smart kid. You know, I graduated high school with honors, whatever that means. But I was always one of the most intelligent kids. And I had the athletic ability, which gave me the confidence and the leadership qualities. Those are things you need to, you know, to be successful, I believe, in life and whatever endeavors that you're getting yourself into. So I basically took what I knew from my playing days and I transferred it into my new career. And initially that was with, you know, working in sales with mortgages, and I became very good at my job. So much so that I earned a trip to Jamaica, all expenses paid, top five in the company to go there. And it became like my new sport was business and sales, because I am so competitive. And that is something that carries over to recovery. I'm competitive where I'm not going to let this beat me anymore. It already took away nearly two decades of my life. So what do I got to do today to assure that that's not going to happen? The competitive nature in me, the leader in me wants to share that with others, and just being confident in what I'm doing, confident in my abilities, that I'm going about this the right way, and there's going to be failure along the way, but I'm confident I know how to handle that failure and the adversity. And by people seeing that I can, all I wanted to do is to show them that they can too. And that's really what it comes down to. Now, I'm not always going to be the best player on the baseball field. No one's always going to be the best at this and that. There's always someone better. But you can always take something from that person. And, you know, what really changed with me is there are a lot of commitments that would come into when I was in the detox in Danvers, and seeing the smiles on these people's faces. And and the confidence. And I wanted that. So my competitive side of me said, okay, what do I have to do to get what they have? And that's what I'm doing today. Every single day, I strive to do better than I was yesterday. And if I can just get one little thing today, then that's a success in my book, especially since I'm going to lay my head on my pillow clean and sober.
Maybe finally, Jason, the recognition that you're getting from the book, you must be happy about that, because I know it's getting noticed around the North Shore as well, but you're also getting some national publicity and notoriety as well. So maybe share that, because again, part of the angle is here's Jason Hyland from Beverly. This is his story, but yet and beyond, not just your story, the book, but you know, but it's getting a lot of publicity. So tell me about some of the recognition you've received from the book.
Yes, you just said it. Jason Hyland from Beverly. Someone in Omaha, Nebraska does not know who Jason Hyland is, but they will, and I guarantee that. But that's why I interviewed others, and I didn't make the book about me, because I am a nobody to the majority of this world. You know, you think of it that way. Okay, I might have a name and have some recognition here on the North Shore, and rightfully so, and I'm proud of that, for better or worse. But the recognition that's coming with it now is that it is going worldwide, that it is the number one best-selling book in the nation right now, and it's really surreal to hear myself even say that, to think it, and to go on Amazon and see that it's the number one new release in multiple categories. And that just shows you, one, the power of a positive mind, the power of, you know, if you want it, you can have it. Because 9 months ago, I was walking around these streets that we look out right now in Beverly and going in these trash barrels collecting cans. I was literally doing that so I could buy nips the next morning. And now here I sit today with being a national best-selling author. And what is that about? It all to me is that more and more people are getting their eyes on the book. And I know this book is going to change people's lives, and it's going to give them hope and inspiration. Whether it's just one page in it or one little part, whatever it may be, is the more people that read it, the more of the message being spread. And that's all I truly care about. The recognition personally, great. You know, it'll look good to have a plaque on my wall, but in the end, all that matters is that there's more people out there that are finding the hope that and inspiration that they need, that there's mothers like my own who can be happy and proud and see their smile in their child's eye, and rather than worrying about when they're going to get that phone call at night saying that it's over. You know, any person that I can help is a blessing. And I say this when I speak, if I can just reach out to one person in the crowd, then I've done my job, because that's one less family that has to worry about that pain and anguish that I mentioned earlier, that I forever have to live with. And it's one less family who, you know, that one more family that can sleep at night knowing that their child is safe, and one more son who knows his dad's still going to be there to be able to play catch the following day, and one more father who's going to be able to walk his daughter down the aisle. And that's all that matters to me, is just one person at a time can be, you know, helped, not saved, because then, you know, the work's on us as an individual. But once we ask for that help, then the sky is the limit. Life is limitless. I am absolutely proof of that. And the other thing I really like to mention, that it's one person can make a difference. I just told you where I was 9 months ago and where I am today. That just shows you, if you really want it, you can go get it, and you can help others and do it, whatever it is that your mind really wants. It's not about writing a book for recognition whatsoever. It's about that recognition leading to others, you know, getting hope and inspiration from that. And that's all that really matters to me, and that's why I'm pushing as hard as I can to get this in front of as many people as possible, and, you know, jumping at the bit at opportunities like this, which again I thank you for.
Jason, really, it is a remarkable story, and congratulations to you. But before I wrap up, one of the things you are doing, I believe you're doing, is speaking in two groups in schools and organizations, right? Or beginning to do that piece. So tell me about that piece. Because that's another way to contact folks. And, because when you speak in a room, in this day and age, there's somebody in that room that's connected with addiction, for sure, in some way.
Yes, I truly believe every single person on this planet is connected to addiction or alcoholism in one way or the other, which are two of the same. Addiction and alcoholism, same exact thing. Now, when I speak, if I reach that one person, great, grand, wonderful. That means that, you know, a job that I'm doing is working, and that's all I want to do. So one of the things you hear about often in recovery is the gifts of sobriety, and I've received more gifts than I can ever imagine, and I've been so truly blessed with the people that have come into my life, the opportunities that have come into my life, and all I'm doing is staying sober one day at a time. I'm telling my truth at the same time. You know, just by being honest, all these doors are opening, like this interview here. And what that does for me is it allows me to spread more of the message, as I keep mentioning, of hope and inspiration. And opportunities that it's crazy to imagine 6 months, 8 months, 9 months into recovery that I'm getting, but I'm just as determined as possible to help out as many as people as possible. And just having that, you know, that will to do whatever it takes is bringing these opportunities to, you know, to the forefront, whether it's someone just private messaging me on social media, getting an email asking to speak, asking to go directly to speak to an individual. I've become a recovery coach in the last 5 weeks. I got certified for that. So that has opened up doors to where, you know, whether it's working in hospitals for ER, people who show up in the ER from drug-related or alcohol-related incidents, anything that is possible that comes up for me, I'm going to jump at the bit, because I don't want anyone to feel what I felt. I don't want anyone to live the way I lived, and I don't want any parent like my mother to have to, you know, go through what she did. And that's what it comes down to for me. So the speaking engagements, I believe it's just part of, like I said, the bigger picture. This isn't about me. This isn't about my recovery whatsoever. It's about this epidemic that we're completely struggling in, that just seems like it's growing and growing and growing, and there's no voice out there making a difference, or no big enough difference. And so I'm going to do whatever I can to get this to a national level. Yes, North Shore, great, absolutely. Help my, you know, people in my hometown, Beverly, absolutely. But it's much, much, much bigger than that. This is a national problem. This is a world problem. And that's what I plan to do, to be on stage and help as many as people as possible, because it's needed and their voice is needed. And I have no problem being that voice.
And finally, just in concluding, Jason, I think that, you know, you've walked the walk, so to speak. And I think that's so powerful when connecting interpersonally with folks, is that the fact is that you've done this. You know, you're doing it right now. And that's pretty powerful in itself.
Yes, it really is. And it's once I became okay with my past and was not afraid to share it, and the shame and guilt, you know, kind of subsided, I realized I can do this and I can help others, because I know how they're feeling and I know what you know, what it takes to get out of that. And if my truth and my honesty, and people are going to have to, you know, out there look down on me and characterize me, a character assassinate me, that's fine, because I know it's helping others, and that's all that matters in the end.
Jason, great talking with you, great meeting you, and best of luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And again, my website is jason-hyland.com, and you can find me on any social media at Jason R. Hyland. It's H-Y-L-A-N-D. Thank you very much.
You got it. Jason Hyland with us. I'm Bill Newell, and this is MSO News Sports.